You're listening to Shift in Action, a program of wisdom media and spirited exchange offered through the Institute of Noetic Sciences. For more information, visit www.shiftinaction.com.
Mind perceives. Dog chasing cat up tree. From the conviction of causality, sequential causality, then one concludes, and this is where the Buddha and I parted company. He said, but that's the way people think. I said, no, they don't. Okay. It's presumed that causality is going on in the stream of consciousness, and this thought is causing this thought, is causing this thought, is causing this thought, in a linear progression. You see, the only thing that's linear is the perception. As creation unfolds, perception processes it sequentially and now thinks sequential processing is what's going on in the world. As we said, you say the yardstick is this long, this is the long side, no, this is the long side, that's an arbitrary point of view. The same with phenomena. Because they're witnessed sequentially, doesn't mean they are occurring, much less caused sequentially at all. So that's the great downside of science, which quantum mechanics, happily, is transcending. So the presumption is that this is the cause of this, and life is a sequence of causes. As I say, this leads to victimology because this is the culprit. If we put him in prison, that'll solve this. Except, as we said today with the shuttle, it's the culture. You know, this is coming out of a totality. If you put this away, this will continue doing the same thing anyway. So, actually, the way thoughts arise then, if they're not sequential, then how do they arise? This is the 98% of the mind that's silent. And each thought arises independently from nothing. Each thought arises from nothingness. No thought is caused by any other cause, by any others preceding. In the book, we said it comes out thusly. A, B, C. This is the origination and the source. It is not the cause. This is it's comparable to morphogenetic fields. Morphogenetic field. Rupert Sheldrake, morphogenetic field. Evolution is occurring in the field of consciousness, then manifests out periodically off the trunk of life as a different branch. If evolution occurred as conceived of by science, you would see evolutionary transitory forms between all the genus and all the species, you know? You don't see a half... half zebra, half horse, you know what I'm saying? It comes out zebra, and then it comes out horse. But you don't see transitory forms at all. If it was happening as a result of a causation in physicality, you would see a slow progression of forms evolving from one form into another. No, the evolution is invisible. It occurs here as a reason, as a consequence of consciousness and realization. Each thought, then, is arising out of nothing. The fact that it has any recognizable pattern is because its origination is in consciousness, invisible, which then expresses itself that way. In the sequential world of perception, then, the sequence is one of perception, not of reality. You understand what I'm saying? You're viewing it sequentially and then presuming. So it's like when we were kids and we had those thick little pads of paper, and when you spun them, you know, the cat went like this. Well, each cat was like this and the cat was like this way. All right. So you sequence them by flipping the big little books or whatever they were called, and it looked like Mickey Mouse was dancing there, and you can see that's what is happening with the human mind. There's nothing dancing out there. You're just flipping the pages of perception and then presuming, now that you've measured the yardstick this way, that that exists within reality. So the limitation then of the intellect is to realize that primarily what it does is select arbitrary extractions, and then it makes the naive error, we'll say it's naive, presumption and error that it's talking about the world and reality, when actually it's talking about itself. The mind is always talking about itself. Itself. How long is something depends on where I select to look. Huh? It likes to talk. The mind likes to talk. You can hardly get people to stop talking. When we resume the lecture, we turn the volume higher and higher and higher to see how high we can get it before they finally, oh. The music that we play calibrates at 700. The reason we play it is because it sort of takes you out of the jargon of the literal intellect and puts you into more the effect of the field, a calibrated level of 700. The same as Chartres Cathedral, the great cathedrals of the world's greatest music, the world's greatest art. So through art, then, one instantly transcends the intellect. When you're listening to a great symphony, for some reason your mind stops thinking. The only relief we get in ordinary life is to listen to great music. So one of the ways to God is through the appreciation of the divinity of beauty, huh? The love of beauty, then. And kids who are entitled to, you know. So, all right, so let's go back to the projector. You can't teach anything without a projector. The other secret this morning, for which the charge is $100 million for me to tell you this, is that 98% of your mind is silent. In fact, we said 98 point something percent. And here's the secret that undoes it altogether. You are not the mind. You are hypnotized by it. Everyone here is at the effect. Everyone here is hypnotically at the effect of the 1%. Let's see if that's a fact. We have permission to ask that, O Lord, in front of this group of resist. What I just stated is a clinical fact. Wow. Only 1% of the mind is talking. And why does it seem so dominant? Because you're in a hypnotic trance. You're watching this 4x5 little black and white TV over in the corner of this giant empty stadium, and you think it's very noisy in here, and you've become hypnotized by it. That's why advertisers spend millions and millions of dollars per second, is because they know you're in a hypnotic state. I used to watch people watching television. They'd watch the program and watching it like this. Then the commercial would come on. They'd go around watching it like this. Then another commercial would come on, and then the program beyond. The state they were in remained the same. I mean, you're that interested in Wheaties? Here's this dramatic story. Everybody's in the throes of it. And now the commercial comes on. I mean, I go to the bathroom and you know. They'd sit right there, hypnotically entranced by it. They're in a hypnotic state. That's the danger of the so-called video game, which they tell you, oh, it's only a game. How to kill women and rob them and blind them and first rape them and then steal their money. Those things make millions of dollars. And as the children sit there doing these video tapes, their parents say, oh, it's only a game. He knows the difference between that and reality. No, he doesn't. He does not know the difference between that and reality. Then he goes to school and shoots all his classmates. They look for psychological reasons. So he must have been abused as a child, right? Everybody was abused as a child, right? Anybody here not abused as a child? No such thing as being a child not being abused. first of all sensible adults hate you to begin with. You know that. You're in the streetcar, everybody's glaring at you, you know. My sister used to run up and down in the streetcar and be an embarrassment. I pretend that I didn't know her. I'd sit over here. Everybody has been rejected, repressed, misunderstood. Give me a break. Excusing brutality that somebody didn't pay attention when you had to go to the potty when you're young. See, that's the victim and the culprit. You see, the perpetrator. Now the perpetrator is some experience in childhood. Now you have to confront the perpetrator, which of course always makes it worse. I always tell victims, never confront the perpetrator. You know why? Because he hates you and he's going to perpetrate you all over again. Just going to give him a second excuse. I didn't get you the first time, dummy. I'm going to get you this time, stupid. They all come back crying and forlorn and worse than they went. Some therapist is always telling him, don't confront your abuser. Right. Forget it. Never confront your abuser. He almost killed you that time. If you go back, he may kill you the next time. So that which hates you hasn't changed any. It hates you. All right. So now we got the secret of the mind. First of all, 99%. So if you look at your mind right now, you'll see that 99% is silent and 1% is listening to what's being said. But primarily your mind is aware of the field, this hall, that you're here, where you are on the planet, that you are, that you exist. 99% of your mind, there's only 1% paying attention just to be polite to the speaker. And say, so you can make sensible notes to take back to class, whatever. Yeah. 99% of your mind is silent right now. How can you tell that? I was going to give the secret away, and then I didn't, did I? Huh. Well, the Buddha said that the infinite reality can be perceived between two thoughts. He thought, it's a mistranslation. No. The infinite space that you're looking for is just prior to the thought. If you learn how to advance your awareness in meditation, you will be able to focus just prior to the evolution of a thought. It's just prior to the thought, not between the thought. Let's see. The infinite space you're looking for is just prior to the thought. We have permission, resist. Yes, it's just prior to the thought. All right, so out of the silent field, then, emerges thoughts. Now, these thoughts arise out of nothing. They arise out of silence, like a wave. As you meditate, you're focused on consciousness as it passes through your awareness. The technique I recommend is, you see, when you're riding in a car as a passenger, ordinarily your mind, your vision shoots ahead to the tree, follows the tree, then it shoots ahead to a billboard, and then it follows the billboard, then it shoots ahead. You see how your eyes are always going left, right, left, right. That's the kind of meditation people say, I can't get my mind to stop. It's endless stories. Endless stories, memories, fantasies, fears of the future, regrets of the past, and nonsense. Itty bitty boo. Hey, free of the fishes in itty bitty boo. Your mind will do anything to stop, to avoid being silent. Huh? If you focus instead, like a passenger in the car, let's say you make a square like this in the window and you watch the passing scene through this window. Now you can't track it from here to there. You can't go from the future to the past. You can't tell me the story about poor old Rover and how he got run over by a car and then how your sister cried about that, and your father was late for dinner. You see how the mind takes off with you? Instead, just witness what's passing through the mind, and you'll see that the content of mind arises like a wave. It comes up, it crests, and then it disappears. Like a tone of music. You hear the tone of music arise. As the tone of music is arising, it's already falling away. It's already falling away as it is arising. So to focus then on what is right in front of your attention, if you try it, most people live either in the front or the back of the wave. Instead of living in the awareness of the presence of divinity in the alwaysness of now, they are anticipating the future. So people live in fear or always guarding against the future. They live in sort of a paranoid readiness, in which you don't trust anybody. You have to be prepared for all disasters. Anticipation, and so that's the mind that is trying to always control the next instant. You'll see that the mind is constantly out to control. Be on top of the next instant. It's fear is if it doesn't do that, it won't survive. Other people live on the back. They don't live on the peak of the crest either. They live on the back of the wave. What just happened? Regret. If I could have only said that, I should have said this, I should have done that. How can that guy get away with that, etc.? They're living in the past. They're constantly rerunning the past so that they can feel better about themselves or rewrite history. Revisionists. The intellectual world is now taken over by revisionists who are going to change the context in which everything happened. You know, they're going to change everything without realizing that truth is dependent on context. What was true then, what was acceptable then, is not acceptable now, because all truth exists only as an expression of the field. You cannot know truth by expressing content and not context. And the biggest source of fallacy is shifting content and context willy-nilly. What is criminal now was virtue then. What is virtue then is criminal now. But you can't run it backwards in time and make it wrong retrospectively. So a revisionist is caught up with fallacy. And the fallacy is trying to shift. So the reality is always the passing moment. The willingness to surrender the current experience without guarding against the future and without clinging to the past. As you do that, you'll see thoughts are arising out of nothing. Just prior to a thought, there is nothing. It arises out of a field of nothingness, gains expression, and falls away into nothing. If you do that in meditative or contemplative practice, I recommend doing it contemplatively. As you walk about the world, you surrender everything to God as it arises. You don't use the words, "I surrender this to God," because that would hang you up in the past, wouldn't it? You just are that way. So what is meditation then? What is what is contemplation? Contemplation is really more akin to a mudra. It is a way of presenting one's existence to God, a yin position. The ego goes after things with a yang whammo. Let's get it done. Let's hit the mark. Let's sell more vacuum cleaners. I was a vacuum cleaner salesman. We have a pep meeting in the morning, hit those streets, ring them doorbells, and sell that lady and get her check. One lady didn't even have a carpet. Oh well. The Kirby was the best vacuum cleaner of the time. Okay. Therefore, what is a spiritual person? A spiritual person is one who is chosen. A certain way of being in the world. The calibrated levels of consciousness we notice at 500. Shift into love. Shift into love. Love is a new paradigm of reality. Love is now a different way of being. Not measurable, non-scientific, not explicable, experiential, purely subjective. Then, love is not what you do. Lovingness is what you have become. The spiritual person then has become that which other people talk about. The movies write about love. Everybody rants and raves about love. It's a way of being in the world. At calibrated level 500 is shifting to a different paradigm. It's what you are. It's a way of being. It's also a way of positioning oneself vis-a-vis divinity. As I said, it's the yin position is, one, I surrender myself to thee, O Lord, and that is one's position towards divinity, towards reality. Don't have to call it divinity. Divinity doesn't care if you call it divinity. Doesn't even know that it's divinity. Humans invented the word divinity. The infinite presence and source of all that exists is beyond flattery. Beyond seduction. With enough penance, you can seduce God into a merciful act. You know? Fantasies. So what can one do then to bring about peace within the world, is to become the most loving person that you can be. To treat everyone with kindness, consideration, forgiveness. To realize that intrinsically all humans are innocent by virtue of the fact that they are unable to tell truth from falsehood. Intrinsically, the human mind, the hardware of the human mind, is programmable and has no capacity to tell whether it's being programmed by truth or falsehood. And there is the limitation and the reason why we have saviors, why Jesus Christ came to earth, and the Buddha, and Krishna, and all the other great avatars. That in and of himself, man is incapable of realizing his own reality. Therefore, it's been considered necessary to have a spiritual teacher, a guru, a mystic, someone who is awake to the reality and explains it. And so we get that the purpose for, there is a difference. Jesus Christ came to earth. We have permission to ask this in front of the audience. Yes? We have permission to ask this. Oh, Lord, we just... All right. Jesus Christ had no previous lifetimes. Human lifetimes, that is a fact. Jesus Christ had no previous lifetimes. He came directly from heaven to reveal to man, who was at that time quite tribal, primitive in that area of the world, but quite advanced in other parts of the world, the nature of heaven and divinity and God and etc. The purpose of Jesus Christ was the salvation of man through his ignorance, resistance. Okay. The purpose of the Buddha had many previous human lifetimes and came to earth to reveal the nature of enlightenment. Is it? Right. Two different missions, yeah? Two different parts, two different eras. Just as the great spiritual teachers, the Vedas, you know, existed 10,000 years. But this part of the world never even heard of it. So isn't that interesting? Jesus Christ never talked about previous lifetimes, and Christianity says very little about karma. Says plenty about future karma. As you reap, you will sow. Plenty about future karma. Says very little, except a few places in Scripture that refer to where Christ said, somebody or other is the reincarnation of so-and-so. I forget, St. Thomas or something. Yeah. Gospel according to Thomas. Mm. The Buddha then affirmed that consciousness evolves over great eons of time. And that what determines karma then is spiritual intention. It's spiritual intention. Not the action, but the intention behind the action. And therefore, because of ignorance, you might say that all actions are intrinsically innocent. the headsman, as he chops off my head, I pray he doesn't feel bad about this. It's only your job. I tell him, look, it's only your job. Just do a good job and feel good about it. You know what I mean? That's his job, chop my head off. So, if you live in the present moment, getting your head chopped off isn't even a problem. If you live on the crest of the wave, you see? So if your head's going to be chopped off, I advise you to study meditation and perfect it, because if you stay on the crest of the moment, you see, if you're not anticipating the future, you don't have any, you know what I'm saying? It's only if you anticipate the future you're going to have, see? And I was illustrated like this. Everybody sitting here in this chair, nobody at this moment has a problem. Just instant. You have a problem right now? You? 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 Isn't there a liar out there? Who will claim to have a problem? No. Because in right at the peak of the crest, no problem is possible. It's only when you write a story about it, when your mind begins to editorialize it. You're in your prison cell. Do you have a problem now? No. They take you away. You have a problem right now? Nope. Take you out to the headsman. You got a problem right now? Nope. Put your head on a block. You got a problem right now? Nope. The axe comes down. You got a problem right now? Not really. You don't really have a problem right now. The axe gets this close. You have a problem now? If you're living on the crest of the wave, no. If you live on the crest of the wave, you can have surgery without anesthesia. Surgery without anesthesia. I've done it more than once. If you stay on the edge, if you begin to anticipate the pain or resist the pain, it's excruciating. Excruciating. Then you realize, because you're experiencing excruciating pain, that you're resisting it. The minute you let go of resisting it and surrender and become one with it, you no longer experience, and the pain stops. So, the head chopped, your head's chopped off. Instantly, you're out of body. You've got a problem now? No. At no time did you have a problem. If you don't want to have your head chopped off, then you got a problem. And as soon as your head is chopped off, you realize life is so much easier without a head. You're out of body, and there you say, man, I've been dragging that thing around for 42 years. I'm glad to get rid of it. I don't know why people hang on to their bodies. They just seem to be enamored of them or something. All right, so we gave away the secret this morning that 99% of your mind is already silent. 99% of your mind is silent. Only 1% is active. You can transcend that 1% by letting go of resisting it. You can see that to experience anything, you cannot experience a thing unless you resist it. And if you're not resisting anything, you don't experience anything. Then you become strange. Now, this part of the mind that is silent, I said it has you hypnotized. It uses various devices to keep you hypnotized. For instance, it likes to politicize. Think of the huge motion and millions of dollars and getting the power politics by politicizing everything within the world, the country, the county, your town. People make such a great hay out of it. Yeah. And one way you can do that is you can moralize. We can moralize. Vanillas are the good people and chocolates are the bad, or vice versa. And we should work harder and convert more vanilla people to chocolate. Yeah. We get more people to go like this and worship Gordon, not the god of forwardness. Okay. So you moralize that us is better than them, and this is how we pee off the world, frankly. We just came back from a number of weeks in Europe, And I'm sort of very closely in touch with world opinion and the sense of it. And I've always been a little embarrassed by the United States, how it's sort of overbearingly us as, you know, sort of do-gooderism. You folks, whose culture is only 6,000 years old, ought to be more like us. And watching this TV guy interview the president of China, the biggest nation in the world, 6,000 years old, and he's like inferring that, you know, you folks should be more like us, and how come you aren't, or something. A little embarrassing. Anyway, so we lack humility. People ask me, what do you think we could do to bring forth world peace? And I tell them, humility. 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 Attraction rather than promotion. Attraction rather than promotion. You know, you don't have to tell everybody that chocolate is superior to vanilla. They're just going to hate your guts, aren't they? Tell you. You know where to go? That's what France does. All right, keep your goddamn vanilla. Because we're going to do chocolate whether you like it or not, folks. We think that's un-American of those Europeans. We're all offended. The Europeans just want to mind their own business and not get... We were just there, you know. There's no hostility towards Americans, you know. You can just see they're far more busy worrying about what's for dinner tonight. Oh, well. Moralize. We idealize things from which we can then moralize and politicize. You see how one thing pulls in the other. We idealize how it should be, ought to be, how those people ought to be. It's very easy to see how other people ought to be. And then politicize it and moralize it so that we can justify it, because we hypothesize if they were just more like we are or the way we told them to be, how much better it would be. See? How much better it would be is, again, you can see romanticizing it. Oh, we're all going to be all different colors and religions and nationalities, and we're going to dance around the maypole happily. It ain't going to work that way, no. Why? Because consciousness evolves over huge eons of time. And we'll get to the more sophisticated application of the levels of consciousness later in the afternoon. The implications for the world in which we live and how it can free us from our own blindness, our own limitation. What's wrong with the world then is our own, the blindness and the limitation of our own lack of vision and understanding. That's what's wrong with the world. Is the blindness and the limitation of our own vision. And if we open our own vision, we see that the world is evolving according to a design not of our own making. We romanticize how it could be, and we criticize those who don't agree with us. People like chocolate have to sit on this side, and people like vanilla have to sit on this side. You know? And in fact, they're not allowed to cross over the border. We romanticize how it could be. We criticize, and look at how much business this throws out. The world is just busy writing newspapers, articles, criticizing, hypothesizing, romanticizing, idealizing. And so you see, this is a huge economic engine. All of this metal processing is a huge economic engine. Yeah? We emotionalize about it. We get very emotional. And we like to dramatize it, which the television does well. In case nobody is paying attention, we catastrophize it. The crisis of, you fill in the blank, the crisis of underage drinking, the crisis of unwed pregnancy, the crisis of, name anything in the world, put crisis in front of it, and you can sell a newspaper, right? The crisis of, you name it. Sit there and look at yourself, and we can name that as a crisis. The crisis of America, being what it is right now, the crisis of America, we can take a globe and stick our finger anywhere and say the crisis of Indonesia, the crisis of the North Pole, Antarctica is being contaminated, the crisis of the oceans, the crisis of the lakes, the crisis of the fields, the crisis of the grass, the crisis of the bugs, the crisis of the lions and the zebras. The crisis is the Africans and the Europeans. The crisis is us. The crisis of everything. So you see, the mind can make anything of anything and then project it out there and think it's a self-existent reality. Catastrophize anything, and that calls for immediate action. Immediate action and a tax increase. An allocation and a new government department. The official Fumbleina department. All departments of the government have to get approval by the Fumbleinas that they are capable of dropping the ball continuously. Okay. Anybody who does the job they're hired to do gets fired instantly. I think that guy's got bombs under his shoes. Shut up, George. So we theorize about everything, how it could be. And so the intellect, there's no discipline to the intellect. In the modern era, any pretense of rationality, the intellect is now thrown out. The concept of causality has been expanded to such an extent that everyone here is in jeopardy at all moments. You can be considered to be the cause of anything, anywhere in the world. Causality. If you eat too many hamburgers, we'll sue the restaurant. You know what I'm saying? McDonald's grabs you by the neck, forced these cheeseburgers on your unwilling throat. Like making pate de foie gras, stuffing the goose to make his liver fat. I caught McDonald doing that, actually. They do it in the alley, they get kids and they force food down their unwilling throats. So we theorize, then, that they are the villains and the perpetrators. Why? Because it's very profitable to do that. So we rationalize that it's for the good of people. For the good of people, we'll make this illegal, we'll raise the tax on that. And to rationalize means now we can do what's completely irrational and feel good about it, that we're helping people. We're helping people in increasing longevity if we sue McDonald's for the fact that you eat too much. We fantasize about how it all should be, and then think when it falls short of our fantasy that there's something wrong with out there. It's wrong out there when it's actually just our own fantasize, which comes from infantilizing in childhood. We intellectualize. And, of course, endlessly what we do is mentalize. The confusion of the intellect, mentation, and the content of mind with reality is what stands in the way of enlightenment. The identification with mentalization, which stands and blinds us. One ten thousandth of a second before the actual reality presents itself. The screen is one tenth of a second. We move that one tenth of a second. Instead of monitoring reality, surrender, and the mind silently is aware of the reality. We idealize. We said idealize twice. Idealizing how it could be and treating the hypothetical as if it were real. That's what we do as a revisionist of history. The hypothetical is a mentalization, and we tend to glamorize it, and demonization is what we started with this morning, and then, or this afternoon. I don't know what it is. Is it morning? Oh, anyway. All right, so the only objection I see to, you know, all of this is the tendency to always demonize the other people. See? So the Dorg worshippers are okay if they wouldn't demonize the ordinary worshipper. And the ordinary worshipper is okay as long as they don't have to demonize all the Dorg people. Understand what I'm saying? It's quite possible to live in a world of peace in which you favor your team without throwing weapons at the other team. So we glamorize the possibility of that which we idealize because of mentalization, unrestricted by reality, which is the nature of the intellect. All of this is very infantile, leads to endless rationalization, theorization, catastrophization. Catastrophization is a word. And the net downside is victimize. So, when vanilla makes chocolate wrong, it then demonizes it, makes victimization acceptable. So there you see the explanation on this board of human history. Each perpetrator views himself as a victim to justify being a perpetrator, and that's how the megalomania continues. Because of the injustice of the Versailles Treaty, now Germany should invade all of Europe, etc. It's always an imagined injustice that you can sell the people on. So this process is fascinating, and to be aware that you become hypnotized by it. Hypnotized in what way? Hypnotized in that you are pulled into an identification with the content of mentalization and believe that it is a self-existent reality out there. The limitations then of the Newtonian paradigm then is the limitation of the intellect itself. To see if we can escape the mind before lunch. Yes, we have the secret. Some of the secrets are beginning to reveal themselves. The world of logic and reason, then, is the Newtonian paradigm. Sir Isaac Newton calibrates at 499. The differential calculus, then, allowed us to study and integrate the world of observable, verifiable science. And it describes how we tend to think the world is. That the Newtonian paradigm is orderly. Things are orderly. Things are logical. Things are predictable. One thing is causing another. Things are sequential, as you can see. We don't say it's mentation that's sequential. We say it's the events in the world that are sequential. That's the big jump of paradigm. Once you realize that this is not reality, this is mental processing. It's mental processing that is sequential. It is not events and not reality that is sequential. We think they see things from the viewpoint of logical and predictable. The world we're used to talking about is deterministic, it's literal, it's pedestrian, it's reductionistic. Everything is seen as separate, A and then B and then C and then D. Everything is discrete. That's how we pick out victim and perpetrator. We poke through the pile and we try to find the guilty party. Discrete, atomistic, meaning separated from others. We say it's provable, it's measurable. We think it's sequential. We think it's all a matter of subtle. That's the way it is. It's temporal. You can solve it with the differential calculus and computers. It's limited, countable. It's actual. It's what's real. It's permanent. It's always that way. It's content. It's objective. It's definable. See, spiritual reality is not definable. That's definable. We have to transcend the definable. We're going to explain the mystery of the universe by noon. We have to move along. So we'll put some secrets of the universe here. There are secrets that only reveal themselves if you know the code. And the code is unknowable about anybody, but this is actually just to remind me about God and the universe and the ego. Where were we? It disappeared. Oh, yes. Everything, and it's finished. You see, it's all finished, done with. That's the way it is. We're certain. And that's what's called an objective, independent, objective universe, which can be described because it's permanent, it's that way, limited, and you see the naivete of that, because it completely leaves out that the most critical element is missing, and that is human consciousness itself. And as we go beyond the Newtonian paradigm, we move to the right-hand column, and now we're getting a little closer to reality. Quantum mechanics brings us a little closer. So the world of the ego, the world of science, the world of the intellect, this is all measurable. It has a certain design, This is causing, can be seen to be causing that.